Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I'm your host and legendary radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver.
Did you have to throw in the legendary? Really? Did you try to sneak that in there? Are you a legend in whose mind?
Felt right, and I went with it. This is our 12.5th annual Fall Spectacular Show. A very brief explanation.
Can we call it the 12.5-ish?
Yeah, it's about right.
Because we don't really know.
No, we either did 12 or 13. It can't quite figure it out, so we just split the difference.
You know, and it's once the 12.5th it got past annual. Having to take our shoes off, we're out.
Hey, complex mathematical calculations, not our strong point. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. And by the way, for those of you who are football fans, Rick will be talking from left to right on your radio dial. I'm going to start at the lower right-hand corner and talk kind of diagonally up to the left, but I'm going to make a
U-turn. But don't worry, he'll fumble.
In the middle of the show. So you might want to, during the first break, position your radio, turn it 90 degrees so you won't get confused.
I think we promise we won't switch every quarter.
Right, Shelley. Thanks for that. Shelley Irving is on assignment in Isomville today, but with me to explain to you how to access our show on the dangerous World Wide Web from the University of Kentucky, Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. Tony, were you impacted by the WPA2 Wi-Fi issue called crack?
I was scared by it. I'll let you explain it because you can do it better than I can.
So you let the sensationalized media overwhelm you into the point of going and buying something?
No, didn't buy anything.
Anyway, we'll get into that. First thing you do, find a secure computer, go to www.wmky.org, and there you will find a safe and wonderful website devoted to Moorhead State Public Radio. There's a link in the menu structures that'll get you to Health Matters. We encourage you to go straight there. But if you peruse some of the other shows along the way, I'm sure it would make station manager Paul Hitchcock very happy. And you know what? We like it when Paul is very happy. So find the page on the Health Matters site. You will get a list of all the most recent shows. We can't put them all up there because, as Tony said, this is 12 and a half, 13 years. We don't know. We know it's over 800 episodes. Frankly, we ran out of server space 10 years ago. So we only keep the best, most recent shows. So you'll find them there. Listen to the audio. There's a link there. Download them. There is also a link to a podcast. If you have a podcast and you understand what a podcast is, then you know exactly what to do with that link. Let's jump over to the interactive portion of Health Matters, and that is where you interact with the show. We've chosen Facebook.com as our platform. Facebook.com/HMRadioShow is where you will find our fan page. We do monitor it. We log into it. We put in things that come across our desks over the course of the week. Leave us some comments. Leave us some things for show topics. Leave us a question you may have. Or you know what? Whenever there's one of these crazy health policy things that show up in the news, ask Tony because he knows all about that stuff. Again, you will find us very interactive, and we will, in fact, participate with you on that website, facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor, as always for this show, Shoes with Tread. When a fearsome monster wants you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread, you'd best be wearing shoes with tread.
Why you got your shoes off?
Hey, I'm really fond of that.
Wait. Are you like Anthony Vincent Weaver Price?
Well, I had several voices. I'll try a different voice for the next one, and maybe it'll come
I got a feeling it's going to sound like Vincent Price.
Yeah, that one sounded more like Whoville.
Well, that one sounded like Gilligan, but that's okay.
Okay, thanks for that, too. This from the Journal of Rehabilitation Research and Development. It's an oldie but goodie. 2008. There we go. Get the dust off this thing.
So you
I've got it. Optimizing footwear for older people at risk of falls. The first fact you need to know from this article, while primary role of a shoe is to protect the foot and facilitate propulsion, say the authors, fashion has strongly influenced the design of footwear through the ages. And there is where the problems begin. Fun fact number two, a survey of footwear purchased by 128 community-dwelling people, half of them men, over age 65, revealed that the majority wore slippers within their homes. 32% of women and 28% of men walked barefoot or wore socks. This is a big problem. Barefoot and socks is not the way you want to go about your home. And you know, and I know, my mother-in-law, as she got older, my mother, as she gets older, they put on slippers, things they can slip their feet in and also can slip right off their feet while they're walking.
They are called slippers for a reason, right?
You think about it. Hey, what are you going to wear around the house to be sure you don't fall? I think I'll wear some
slippers. Because that's that whole thing where we park in the driveway, right?
Fun fact number three, older people, irrespective of their dwelling status, wear poorly fitted shoes.
How are your shoes fitted there, older person?
Well, they did mention, interesting enough, my mother, we bought her some shoes because her shoes were too narrow. Well, she couldn't walk because her toes were hurting. So we said, let's try some wider shoes. But she had been
shouldn't
buying
they be
hers.
Like longer?
In her case, and in a lot of in the case of a lot of women, the ball of the foot gets wider as you get older. Particularly if you've been wearing high heels and putting pressure, it sort of splays the heads of the metatarsals out. It's not a good thing, and the ball of the foot gets wider. And she was wearing basically teenage girl shoes that she had bought at
an
department
store. And
that's
rough on her metatarsals.
It is rough on your metatarsals. Thank you for. Yes. And then fun fact number four, investigating falls in a sample of 96 male and female community dwellers ages 60 to 80.
They just couldn't get the other four?
You wonder about that. They just apparently got tired. Participants who had falls reported wearing shoes with slippery soles or slippers as a predisposing factor in around 10% of falls. We'll come back with fun facts number 5 through 10, plus a bonus fun fact number 11 in our next fractional portion. That's our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. When fearsome monsters want you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread, you best be wearing Shoes with Tread. First article, falling down the stairs. This was
not being pushed down the stairs.
The American Journal of, well, there's that too. This is, after all, very close to Halloween. The American Journal of Emergency Medicine online published September 20th. More than 1 million Americans injure themselves on the stairs every year.
Do you have stairs in your house?
We do.
Have you ever injured yourself on the stairs?
Not on these. My parents, you've heard my story about my parents. They have a split-level house on the side of a hill with stairs going in every direction. There is no way to walk into their house on level ground.
Don't you have a split-level house?
No, we've got.
Well, you've got a two-level house.
But
aren't you on a bit of an incline?
We are on an incline, but all the essential functions of the house are on one floor, and that's not accidental. This was the way we set our house up. As we get older, we can close down the basement. The upstairs can be used for storage, and we can live comfortably on the first floor. The laundry, the kitchen, the bathtubs, the living room, and the entrance are all on the same floor.
Well, it's good that you have the entrance there.
Yeah, which is not actually,
pretty handy for trying to get in.
More than 1 million Americans injure themselves on the stairs each year. Older adults, younger children, and women report more injuries, but all ages show up in the emergency rooms. Stairs are a common source of injury among all ages, and the frequency is increasing, says senior author of this study, Dr. Gary Smith of Nationwide Children's. And again, they have access to this electronic database of emergency room visits. About half the homes in the U.S. contain stairs. The direct and indirect costs of non-fatal stair injuries around $92 billion with a B dollars annually, according to the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System. And they looked at injuries between 1990 and 2012, 25 million patients over 23 years, 38 stair-related injuries per 10,000 residents annually, 3,000 per day, or, and here's the key part, one stair-related injury every 30 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah. Injury rates fell by about 13% early on, but then they rose by 24%. That is, there are more people falling now than there were. Perhaps there are some minor safety features built into stairs, but it may be that older people are using the stairs. It may be. They mentioned 60% of the injuries are at home. 62% of the patients were women. This is one injury, one accident, where women actually are more likely to be injured than men. They feel this may be related to performing household chores. So, you think, hey, those men, they're really careful. No, those men are just not on the stairs as much as the women are. They're, in fact,
they're
in the recliner.
They're not carrying the vacuum cleaner up and down the stairs or the,
exactly right. If you looked at recliner-related injuries over the same period of time, I think the men are going to easily have more
recliner
injuries.
Yeah, but that's usually an injury to the recliner. It's not to the man.
Adults over age 85, children under 3, and young adults in their 20s had the highest injury rates. Two-thirds of these visitors were ages 11 to 60, though. 94% treated and released, 6% admitted. Most common injuries, sprains, strains, scrapes, bruises, and broken bones. Kids under 10 had more head injuries. 60% happened without a cause. They slipped, tripped, or misstepped. Some were carrying objects and couldn't see. My wife, I've told this on this show before, when she was working at DuPont, they had a company rule. You could not go on the steps with both arms full. As you had to make two trips with things in one arm or whatever it took, but you could not take the stairs with both arms carrying something. One hand had to be free to hold on to the rail.
That's a good rule.
It really is. It's
I mean,
a problem.
Let's be honest. That's a good rule. I mean, that's just good.
Yeah. The conclusions of this, new stair construction should increase the horizontal surfaces. That is, you know, the steep steps are always the trickiest.
Well, they are. But even a step that, you know, most steps, I mean, Tony, I mean, I don't know if, you know, we've talked about size of feet, but, you know, my feet are, you know, size 13. I mean, it is impossible. I've never found a stair that I could go up and keep my feet completely straight without them hanging off. Right. So,
yeah.
I mean, just steps aren't. Really, and let's be honest, they're doing that so that they can conserve space, because a stair in a house, while it may serve a utilitarian purpose, it's kind of a waste of space.
Yep, it is. They also mention, and this seems obvious, but horizontal and vertical surfaces should be uniform. That is, there should not be that extra long step, or at the bottom, the rise is a little bit less than the others. Or the other thing they point out is that you got to understand when the steps are over. Have you had that happen
absolutely,
to you?
Absolutely.
You think there's another one, or you didn't think there was another one.
Well, and then you again, you come step. Along, you put something that's 2 or 3 inches. Maybe you put a subfloor in, or you put something that's higher. And so the last step isn't the same distance. And so at night when the lights are off, or when you're carrying something, like maybe, you know, again, you should be able to see it. But still, either way, you're going off of muscle memory. Well, you've just went down or up 14 stairs and developed muscle memory. And that last one can throw you.
It can. The other thing they mentioned is that the handrails on it ought to be that kind that you can wrap your hand around, put your entire hand around. If you have flat handrails so that your hand rides along the top of it, you're not going to really be able to save yourself that way. So the pipe type of handrails are much better. Something that if something did happen, you could tighten your hand and could save yourself from falling. That would be really useful.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who's going to put pipe in their house for the handrail?
Well, you could put...
Most of them are decorative wood, and they're bigger than you can get your hand around.
That's right. And so what you need is... And you could put those in. I've seen those in, and I've seen kind of offset on the inside a lower functional handrail behind the big broad thing.
Well, now
you've got to
make it wider,
down.
Tony. You've just killed my house. You've just taken half my square footage.
I saved your life, buddy. I saved your life.
Thank you. You cost me.
Remember this conversation, because we're going to repeat this in our third fractional portion.
We always
when we talk about
things.
Cancer drugs, but for the moment, we're going to have to take a break. It is time to reorient your radio. Remember, I will be reversing direction on your radio dial for the second
no,
fractional
you
portion.
No, won't. We're not switching sides at half or quarter or whatever. We're just not doing it. So, sorry. Go ahead and have your little break.
Okay, fine. Leave it that way and see if you get confused. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, sponsoring a Lung Health Awareness Fair 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 14th at the Center for Health, Education, and Research in Moorhead. Information about lung cancer screenings and smoking cessation, refreshments, door prizes, and the public is invited. 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 14th. More information online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. Boy, I really wanted to say final. Isn't that bad? I really want to say final. This
we'll
is Rick
move
Phillips.
Right through the show. I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 12.5th annual Fall Spectacular Show.
12.5-ish. Come on.
12.5-ish annual Fall Spectacular Show. Our salute to autumnal disequilibrium. We are, every fall, we try to prepare for the slippery days of winter by giving you some useful, helpful advice on how to prevent falls. This from the National Council on Aging, modified specifically for Health Matters, 5 steps to prevent falls among your loved ones. Before I do that, though, I'll hold you in suspense on that. I've got to go to the sponsor. Our sponsor, Shoes with Tread, reminding you, when a fearsome monster wants you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread, you'd best be wearing shoes with tread. Okay, that didn't work either. We'll try it again, third fractional portion.
Vincent
this
Price.
From the Journal of Rehabilitation Research and Development, an oldie but a goodie, November 8th, 2008, Optimizing Footwear for Older People at Risk of Falls. Just reminding you, the original purpose of shoes, and still what should be the purpose of shoes, is to protect your feet. However, fashion has prevailed.
Those are nice. Those are some good-looking sandals you got on.
Do you like the thong?
No. I wasn't going there.
Men over age 65, majority wore slippers in their homes. 32% of women, 28% of men walked around barefoot or wore socks. That is appalling. Older people, irrespective of their dwelling status, that is in nursing homes or in homebound or in their own homes, wore poorly fitted shoes, which may lead to foot problems and in turn falls. And fun fact number four, dwellers ages 60 to 80 years, they found that wearing shoes with slippery soles or slippers was a predisposing factor in 10% of falls. Now we're up to fun fact number five. Out of 22 falls, 10 occurred while participants were wearing either heavy boots or boots with cutaway heels, slip-on shoes, or slippers. And fun fact number six, shoes with heels greater than 2.5 centimeters. Keep in mind, 2.54 centimeters per inch, shoes greater basically than an inch heel, increase the risk of falls. They doubled your risk of having falls. Fun fact number seven, walking barefoot in socks increase your risk of falls indoors by 14 times. Let me say that again. Walking barefoot or in socks increase your risk of falls indoors by 14 times. Now, the problem is these are, we call them epidemiologic observational studies. That is, people who walked around barefoot or in socks had a 14 times higher risk of falls. But the thing is, if you think about it, an elderly person who has poor balance and is sick or frail in the first place is not going to put on hiking boots. So the problem with this is you can't tell whether the illness made them put on socks or whether the socks, in fact, made them fall. Could be either one. Fun fact number eight, slip-on shoes and sandals associated with a greater risk of foot fracture from a fall. Now, this is not just about falling, but actually being injured. Slip-on shoes and sandals, greater risk, 2.3 times higher with slip-on shoes, 3.1 with sandals. And wearing medium to high heels increase the risk of fractures at five sites. Your foot, your distal forearm, trying to catch yourself, your proximal humerus, trying to catch yourself, your pelvis, and the shaft of your tibia and fibula. Those are your shin bones. And people ages 45 years and older. So again, if you are wearing slip-ons, if you are going around in socks, your risk of falling is higher, we believe, although we're not certain of that because it may be that you're just too sick to put on shoes or too frail to put on shoes. But if you put on slip-ons or sandals, you have higher risk of fractures.
So I wonder if Crocs qualify as slip-ons.
Oh, they absolutely do.
But they have a four-wheel drive mode. You can actually lock them in and make them stay on.
You can, but you don't. I know you don't because you told me you don't.
Well,
you flip that.
Rarely do I need four-wheel drive mode.
There is a heel brace on the back of Crocs, which Rick flips over and wears over the front of his foot, so he can slide his feet in and out of these shoes easily.
But the weird thing is they, for some reason, they stay on. They're not.
They have stayed on. That's our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. When fearsome monsters want you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread. You'd best be wearing shoes with tread.
Do you know who that sounded like?
Me.
Count Chocula. That's Count Chocula right there.
Okay.
You better talk about marshmallows and, you know.
From the National Council on Aging, five steps for preventing falls among your elderly loved ones. First of all, the common factors, balance and gait. If we can get better balance, if we are stronger and steadier in our gait, we're less likely to fall. Vision. This is huge. Cataracts. Increased risk of falls, cataract surgery reduces the risk. Bifocals, turns out, increase your risk of falls.
You think?
Yeah, reading glasses. Basically, you blur the ground below you in order to be able
to
read.
Let's be honest. I mean, bifocals, at the bottom of them, the bottom of your glasses are the part you look through and read close, and they're always easy. The focal point is not anywhere near your toes.
The ground is always out of focus.
Exactly.
I mean, if they're designed properly, it will. Medications. We'll talk more about that a little bit later as well. The environment. Really simple modifications we talked about, like stair rails, lighting, and so forth. And then chronic conditions, things like diabetes, stroke, or arthritis that affect your muscle function. And here are the five steps, according to the National Council on Aging, to reduce falls. Number one, if you have someone, an elderly person that you love, and you want to help them reduce falls, talk to them about their current health conditions. Are they having trouble remembering their medications? Is it getting difficult for them to do things? Just talk to them about how they are getting about in their house or wherever they live. Two, ask about the last eye checkup. Again, you can do a lot of good things for a person's eyes. They also mentioned those tint-changing lenses, you know, the automatic sunglasses. Well, that's pretty bad if you think about it. When you come in the house, if those things are still dark, your first few steps, you're just going on memory alone. And likewise, if you go past a window where there's bright sunshine, they're going to go dark on you, and then you get in the dark part of the house. Bifocals, as I mentioned, are problematic. Number three, watch to see if they're holding onto walls, furniture, or someone else when they're walking, or if they have difficulty arising from a chair. We've talked about on this show before the get-up-and-go test, where you just simply say, get up and go. They have to rise from a chair and start walking, and you can time them and see whether or not they're able to rise quickly. If they have difficulty getting out of a chair, that's the kind of person that's at high risk or fall. Talk about their medications. Encourage them to discuss their concerns with their doctor or pharmacist. Medications are a very common cause of falls. And then finally, do yourself, do a walkthrough, safety assessment of the home. Look at lighting, stairs, bathrooms, and particularly if they have grab bars in the bathrooms, and also cords or other obstacles in the way. Make sure there are clear, wide paths where they can get about the house. And you can do that. You may be able to prevent someone you love from falling.
I mean, because, you know, the one thing we really haven't talked about is, you know, there's a certain age where, you know, you hit and then a fall becomes a life-threatening event. I mean, you know, when I'm 30, I fall down and people laugh at me and my, you know, I get my ego bruised. When I'm 75 and I fall and I break my hip, that is a life-altering event and has potential fatal ramifications.
Yeah, it does. And I'm now to that, starting to become that age. And they talk about, you know, most adults, I think over 65, have two or three falls a year. And I'm thinking,
right. Yeah,
I have that many falls. I do. I mean, it's hard to be up and moving around and not have some falls.
Interesting. You know, I don't know that I would say I have. I mean, at I'll be 50 next year, but I've not. I don't have three per year, but I have the every other year when I have one, it's a doozy. I mean, for the most part, I'm able to stay upright and not fall down. But boy, I tell you, when I do, it's out of the blue, and it's like I hope nobody's around. Yeah. They could get hurt. They could get hurt as hard as I'm coming down on the ground.
Well, and related to that, first of all, let me run through this, and we'll get there eventually. Well,
would you walk through it so we can understand?
We will walk through it slowly. This was from Marshfield, Wisconsin. The Center for Clinical Epidemiology and Population Management, and we presented this last year. It was when it was released, this was about tree stand fall injuries. And again, this is we're starting getting close to hunting season. And they measured tree stand fall injuries from 2009 to 2013, five hunting season in a rural area of north central Wisconsin. So this is not a national database. It was simply the experiences of hospitals in their region. There were around 16,000 and change deer hunters in any given year in Wisconsin. There were 39, and 92% of them male, medically attended tree stand fall injuries between 2009 and 2013. 39. So it is not common for a person to fall out of a tree stand. You got 16,000 hunters. I don't know how many of them were up in tree stands, but over a five-year period, 39 tree stand injuries. Mainly occurred in the legs, 23 out of the 29, out of the 39, sorry. Two fatalities, one paralysis. So when you fall out of a tree stand, it's a pretty big deal. Now, this was something I didn't appreciate when I read this thing initially. Most falls, by the way, they're not getting more frequent. They're about the same every year. You're going to have about the same number of injuries, just a handful. Most falls occurred among archery hunters. Yeah, I don't know why. Here's my theory. The gun guys got their deer earlier. The archery guys had to hang around longer.
I think archery season opens first.
I know, but what I mean is if you're up in a tree stand with a deer, a gun, you can pretty well hit it from any angle. But if you're going to arch that deer, now this is me being a not hunter, and if I'm wrong, you guys out there that hunt, correct me on this. But I'm just saying it may be more difficult. But here's the thing. In the evening and when descending from the tree stand, that's when they fell. You know, when I first read this, I thought, well, gee, they fall asleep and they just keel over. That is not so. After they have been sitting for a long period of time, they start to climb down and their legs don't work. Out in the cold, sitting for hours, waiting to arch a deer, legs rubbery, fall out of the tree stand. If there's any predominance of bow hunters in that 39 over 5 years, that says something, because I think the majority of people that hunt deer hunt with rifles.
I don't know. Well, you and I both are probably the same on hunting. I mean, I own guns. I've had to, you know, when you own a farm, you kind of have to, you know, there's varmints and things you have to deal with. But when I was younger, and probably in my 20s, you know, I tried the whole hunting thing. And I just never could enjoy it because of my fear of snakes.
That's a tough one.
And yeah. So I never, everything you hunt, you have to look up. And I was always looking down. And so I could never see the squirrel. I could never see the bird. I could never see it because I'm looking down.
There ended the career of Rick O' the Woods.
Oh, no. I finally, I was in Louisiana, too.
That's so true. And let me tell you, snakes Louisiana, are an issue in Louisiana.
Yeah, there's lots of, and they're kind of nasty little critters. And so one time I'm out hunting and a snake actually, a cottonmouth or a water moccasin, actually jumped out in front of me. And I had a 12-gauge shotgun in my hand, and it was one of the most rewarding times of my life.
My point is, if you've been sitting all day and you're descending, and this again goes back to stair injuries and so forth. If you are, if you've been working hard, if your muscles are fatigued, or if you're not working out as much as you used to, you're at a higher risk of fall because of that. And I think these hunters just remind us of that. Although the actual rate of falls from deer stands is reassuringly low. Next up, this is also an oldie but goodie. This was March of 2009, the Morbidity Mortality Weekly Report. This is something the CDC puts together. And they mention 87,000 American humans wind up in the emergency rooms with injuries from falls related to domestic pets every year. 1% of the 8 million fall treated injuries in emergency departments in 2006. This, again, was the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System, the same thing that we talked about the stair injuries, which was just reported. Dogs, 90% of the pet-related falls. Injury rates substantially higher with dogs, 13 times higher among children to age 14, and 10 times higher among adults. Hospitalization similar for dogs and for cats. A cat will put you in the hospital.
I mean,
you got a cat injury.
Well, they won't move.
Yeah, I know.
Their way or the highway.
Females twice as likely as males. Again, lugging the vacuum cleaner up and down the stairs, and there's the dog. You can just see it. You know it happens around our house all the time. Injuries more frequent among children age 14 and then adults ages 35 to 54. That's where the pet injuries occur. Now, I worry about it from my mother. Now, her dog, fortunately, is about as old as she is, and so neither one of them is going to move very fast. As long as they start off on opposite sides of the room, they're likely to stay there. Most common injuries, fractures in a third of them, bruises or abrasions in a quarter of them. Individuals 75 and older had the highest rates of fracture. Their recommendation, prevention strategies should focus on increasing public awareness of pets and pet items as fall hazards, and reinforce the American Veterinary Medical Association recommendations for obedience training for dogs. And this is where Health Matters got the idea that if you or someone you love is over age 65 and is buying a dog, that dog needs obedience training yearly. My mother spoils that dog rotten. That dog will, when it was younger, it's now too old to put its paws up on you, but it would easily jump up on you, jump in your lap or do whatever when it was a pup.
So Tony, I'm really, there's a question that's on my mind about that. And I think I'm going to go ahead and just take the time and ask you, are you more concerned that the dog isn't obedient and thus it's going to cause your mother some problems potentially with a fall? Or are you upset because your mom really didn't do that? She didn't spoil you like that. Is there some jealousy here? Am I feeling some jealousy against this dog?
You're trying to make an issue here that's just not going to – this is not going to happen. This is like my Boris Karloff voice. This is not happening.
I don't know. I sense some real tension in that. That dog is spoiled rotten. It's the way you said
increasing.
Rotten.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, this dog is getting older, and this dog will not be on this planet a whole lot longer. And so what do we do after the dog dies? My mom lives alone. It would be very nice if she had a pet to keep her company. She is not getting a puppy. She could not – first of all, she couldn't handle a puppy. And then secondly, that puppy would probably – at some point, trip her or jump up on her and knock her down. You can't do that at her age. So, you know, I don't think she's going to get a mature dog either. She spoils dogs, and as she's gotten older, it gets worse. My wife just doesn't really trust her with a dog, so this will be the last dog for her, which is unfortunate. I mean, she loves having dogs,
right.
But living alone—
It's actually good for her, probably.
It is, with her living alone, but I just can't see where it's going to be safe, her having a dog in the house, because of the fact that she really doesn't spend the time necessary to train it, and she also doesn't enforce any discipline on the dog. You know, and the great thing about dogs is if you have time, you can train them to do all kinds of stuff, but at the very least, you can train them not to jump on people.
I think it's just great how you totally avoided my question and didn't accept the premise of my response.
Well, that's because you don't know my family dynamics. When you say that I would be jealous of my mother, I am.
No. You're not jealous of your mother. You're jealous of the dog.
Jealous of the dog.
She spoils the dog, and she didn't spoil you.
There will come a time in your life, Rick, when you will have your own family, and you will not be worried about your mother's priorities.
Oh, no, I know. My wife spoils our dog, and I know how she feels.
Head of a household. I am the pater familias. I take care of my family, and I don't look backwards on things like that.
Okay. So we can I'll try to see what I can do to get you spoiled more. I get it. I sense it. It's okay. Let it out, Tony.
Let it out. You know, you've heard the phrase, a person can't chew gum and walk at the same time.
Yeah.
It's actually true.
Of course.
It is actually true.
That's like saying somebody can multitask.
September 14, 2016, published. There were two studies, one in motor control and the other in neuroscience letters, last September. And they were talking about imperfect bites and poor postural and balance control. Both of them by the Department of Physiology at the University of Barcelona in Spain. Oh, and also the University of Innsbruck in Austria. What they did with these studies, there were three dental occlusion conditions. No dental contact. That is, you're walking or standing with your mouth slightly open. Your teeth are not in contact with each other. Secondly, you have maximum dental contact. Your mouth is closed. Your teeth are lined up and on top of each other. Or the third one is you have a dental malocclusion, your buck tooth, something like that. Now, I want our radio fans to think about which monster or terrifying creature has dental problems. There is one specific type of monster specifically associated with dental problems. We'll come back and talk more about that in our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, sponsoring a Lung Health Awareness Fair 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 14th at the Center for Health, Education, and Research in Moorhead. Information about lung cancer screenings and smoking cessation, refreshments, door prizes, and the public is invited. 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 14th. More information online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and finally the final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver.
No, you're not, Vincent.
Okay. I'm Dr. Tony Weaver.
I'm actually going with Count Chocula.
Ah, Halloween. Time for trick-or-treating and my delicious chocolate cereal, Count Chocula. My Count Chocula is the cereal with goblin good chocolate-flavored marshmallows.
12.5-ish annual Fall Spectacular Show.
Thank
you. Salute to the autumnal falls. We've been talking about fall prevention, and we're not really sure how long we've been doing this, but sometime either 12 or 13 times, so it's a 12-ish, 13-ish annual.
Yeah, for event. The real Health Matters guru out there, why don't you tell us? You think anybody actually knows?
No, because you can't get access to the archives, and I've destroyed the originals.
But then there's somebody out there who's heard all our shows.
In the dense fog of time now, the shows kind of become a little bit sketchy, don't they?
But there isn't somebody out there who knows them all.
No.
Who remembers the Manly Man show.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, that was early on.
To hold my beer and watch this show. Boy, the
name. It sounds like you do. I don't know. This was just a fall spectacular. Our sponsor for the final time, Shoes with Tread. When a fearsome monster wants you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread, you best be wearing Shoes with Tread. Our sponsor, Shoes with Tread, reminding you one of the contributing factors for falls, particularly for older people at risk of falls, is their shoes. And we've been through them, I think, fun facts 1 through 8. I'll remind you of fun fact 8. Slip-ons and sandals were associated with a greater risk of foot fracture from a fall, 2 times higher with slip-ons, and 3 times higher risk of a fracture when you're wearing sandals. Now, A couple of other things you need to be aware of. This is number 9. Variations in the sole or midsole hardness do not appear to alter balance during standing, but they do impair your stability. That is, if you are wearing running shoes, that sounds like a great idea, but if they have very thick soles, you can't quite figure out whether the ground is level or tilted. Your foot has actually lost contact with the ground. You've lost sensory contact with the ground. So they believe that a firmer sole would be a better solution, but they cannot prove that. And all they know is that standing balance doesn't seem to be affected. That's the best we've got. And then fun fact number 10, in addition to providing greater mechanical stability to the ankle joint, the extra sensory input provided by a high-collar shoe, a high-top shoe, a hiking boot-type shoe, the extra sensory input helps you to know the position of your joint. Now, this makes perfect sense. If your foot is at a slight angle, not only will you feel that on the bottom of your foot, but if you're wearing hiking boots, you will feel that on your ankle, and you may be able to correct that imbalance. So it gives you stability, but it also gives you additional sensation about whether the ground is level or not if you have high-top shoes. Finally, 34% of ice and snow slip-related injuries in a Swedish town occurred in adults ages 50 to 79 years old. Shoes lacking slip-resistant soles likely contributed to these incidents. Now, it is true. If you're wearing shoes with tread, if you're wearing slip-resistant soles and you have a slip-resistant floor and you have sort of a shuffling gait, you may not be able to release from the floor. Your feet may stick to the floor, particularly if you're making a turn, and it could actually make things worse. But for most circumstances, shoes with tread, shoes with some grip resistance are a good thing. And we are at Health Matters. We have bought yak tracks for years now after a study looking at yak tracks and falls found that they dropped the rate of falls over winter shoes. Injurious falls dropped by 87% in people wearing yak tracks. I found them to be invaluable when we were walking down our driveway to feed our horse and there is snowfall. It's a wonderful device.
Well, they might as well be a small, track vehicle on your feet, right?
Right. And they're easy to get on, relatively easy to get on and off, considering what they do. So, in summary, the ideal shoe, a high collar in the back, a high top shoe to give you ankle support and also that additional sensation, low heel height, an inch heel or more doubles your risk of falling. Beveled heel, because that gives you a nice smooth transition. You don't strike hard on the heel. A fastening mechanism. Slippers do not work. A thin, firm midsole. We're not certain, but we believe that those big, soft, pillowy midsoles make you lose contact with the ground. And finally, a slip-resistant sole. That's our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. Now, at the end of last fractional portion, we talked about malocclusion. That is, your teeth, when you bite down, don't come exactly together. The most common type of malocclusion is a bucktooth type deformity. And I asked the question, which Halloween monster has dental malocclusion? And in my opinion, it is Dracula.
Of course.
Because he's got those fangs that stick out over the bottom of his teeth.
Right.
Now, this is useful information.
They actually are two of his front teeth, right?
Right. And this is useful information because it turns out that those with malocclusions have worse balance. So if you are in a race to get away from Dracula, if you can move rather quickly, he is more likely to stumble and fall.
Provided he doesn't turn into a bat and chase you.
Well, there's that.
Sorry.
Well, just thanks for just ruining the whole premise of the article. Okay? This was science. Motor Control Neuroscience Letters, September 2016.
But you should come back and say he can't bite you as a bat, so he has to turn back into Dracula, which then if you keep running, he'll never catch you.
Is that true? He can't bite you as a bat?
I don't think so.
Well, I know he flies in the window. I mean, I always thought
at this point, neither one of us can really be authoritative on Dracula.
That's true. I have no idea, and I'm very confused.
Let's just say run.
I did go with my daughter to see one of those new vampire movies and not...
Well, nobody ran in those.
That was awful. It really was. I still have nightmares about that one because it was so bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Now.
Where were you?
We were not in Moorhead. We were somewhere else. But anyway, we went.
You were talking about something.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Halloween. Yeah,
Halloween and falls. Okay. So this research was done on people. These were volunteers. and they had a prosthesis that made them have a malocclusion. In other words, it shifted their jaws.
Nice.
So that they didn't bite together properly. They had a stable platform and an unstable platform, eyes open, eyes closed, and they checked their balance. And what they found was that...
They talked like Vincent Price, too?
When they were relatively fresh, that is, when they had not gotten tired, they were not fatigued, they could maintain their balance even with this malocclusion thing. They had a silicone prosthesis they stuck in that sort of got their jaw out of alignment. And they tried to get it back into alignment, but it took some extra energy and some extra mental focus to try to keep their jaws in line. And as it turned out, particularly when they got tired, they were more likely to trip and fall. Now, they mentioned, and again, this was published in Neuroscience Letters. They said, well, you know, there is the trigeminal nerve, which is has a branch that does affect the jaw muscles, and there is the next nerve up is the nerve of hearing, which also controls your balance. These are responsible for, again, chewing function and balance control, and they're next to each other. So they thought maybe that one stimulation, one nerve would affect the other. I think the other thing is, quite simply, when we talk about walking and chewing gum, it is multitasking in a sense. That is, you have to spend some energy and some mental concentration trying to either chew gum or, in this case, to keep your jaws lined up when you're using this prosthesis.
Do you think there's any syncopation required? Do you think there's any, okay, I got to figure out how to get this these things kind of synced together so they just kind of work without thinking?
I don't know. They said they looked at the type of dental occlusion, control of posture, and so forth, and they found that balance was improved when the malocclusions were corrected. And that especially if you left your mouth open while you walked, you know, Michael Jordan used to always have his tongue hanging out when he played basketball.
Made him better.
Yeah, because, I don't know, maybe his teeth
didn't line up
right.
He wasn't going to fall. Well, yeah. He wasn't going to fall, that's for sure.
Final conclusion, when subjects were tired, their balance was worse under both stable and unstable platform conditions. Under static conditions, the factor had the greatest impact was fatigue. And so we're back to our deer tree stand. You know, we should check those guys' teeth. But it is hard. You know, I know when I'm carrying something, when my muscles are fatigued or when I'm focused on trying to carry something, I am much more likely to trip. How many times have I been lifting a heavy weight and I've stumbled under that weight? Not because the weight itself was heavy, because I was not watching my feet. I was not focused
on
where
I was
going.
Or you got to step over something that's a 6-inch obstacle that normally would be no issue at all. But because you're fatigued, you end up lifting your foot 5.5 inches. And so you just end up hitting the front of it. And then that causes your body, your normal gait at that point gets thrown out of balance. And so now every muscle in your body is trying to get you back into balance. And that's just bad.
So exercise to increase muscle strength and endurance is going to be important in fall prevention. And it turns out, no matter what you think about this dental occlusion thing, and again, it was about chewing gum and walking. It was about Dracula. I said, okay, we'll put that in. But whatever you think about this, anything that changes a person's concentration and focus away from their balance does have an impact on their balance, particularly as they get fatigued. You may remember, this was Canadian Journal of Cardiology. I saw it October 6th. Watching an intense hockey game could double your heart rate. They had a handful of ice hockey lovers. Previous studies, 10 Scottish soccer fans. If their team won, their heart rate went up by 23 beats a minute. They also found an excess in cardiovascular deaths of Dutch men ages 45 or older when their team lost a penalty shootout during a soccer match. Well, these were 10 people who recruited to watch a live hockey game, and 10 watched the game on TV. No known heart disease, no complications in the past. Average resting heart rate was 60. Monitored for 250 minutes, their heart rate increased by 92%, jumping up to 114 beats per minute during the course of the game. And we talked about that article was very similar to UK basketball fans during March Madness. And I mentioned that the ICU nurses would often turn the TV sets off because they were worried that the cardiac patients may have additional problems during March Madness and UK their basketball team often plays in March, and that's a concern. So we were all ready to talk about the intense cardiac stress of watching UK basketball or watching a sport for a team that you really, really are fanatically devoted to. These things can make a change. And I thought, okay, now we understand there are some things in life. And then almost the same time, this was October 2nd, the other was October 6th. This one came to my desk later than the other one. This was a press release from University College of London, and they looked at watching a musical, specifically watching the musical Dreamgirls in London, 28 minutes with a heart rate between 50 and 70% of their maximum. And this was a stimulating. It was about where you want for cardiac fitness. So again, they're not, these people are not getting into dangerously high cardiac levels by watching Dreamgirls, but their heart rates nearly double from their resting rate and the end of the first act. And at the end of the second act of Dreamgirls, it nearly tripled from its resting rate, which is stunning to me.
Save maybe Wicked. Maybe.
Rick
maybe
loves the musical Wicked.
I do. And you know what? The first 5 minutes of The Lion King is pretty impressive. But beyond that, I've never found a real musical that would raise my heart rate like that.
You know, my problem is, again, being older than you, I remember Oklahoma, and it just doesn't get the job done on the heart rate, you know?
I'm right there with you on this one. Because
but Wicked.
Wicked is a bit, but I like the story to Wicked. To me, Wicked is a cool take on The Wizard of Oz. To me, Wicked takes everything I ever thought about The Wizard of Oz and reverses it.
I've got an article here. This was from Circulation. Circulation has several journals that they publish, and this was on their Cardiac Dysrhythmia Journal, and it was published this fall. This was the effect of mental challenge induced by movie clips on action potential duration. Now, action potential duration is a measure of how long it takes that little blip on the monitor to go from up to its peak and then to fall back down to normal. And that is a surrogate marker for whether or not your heart's going to have an irregular heartbeat. So they said, well, gee, do you think you could induce an irregular heartbeat at a scary movie? And they showed, they had 19 subjects. The methods are just fascinating. These were 19 subjects. They were about 58 years old. They all were about to undergo ablation for atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation is that heart rhythm that everybody has that they're trying to find the best blood thinner for.
Right.
Okay, and it's a very common cardiac problem in elderly men and older men. And this was men in their 50s. 17 out of 19 were male. They did informed consent before they started to do that. But right before they were about to fix their irregular heartbeat, they said, hey, how would you like to watch a little movie clip? And they showed them a five-minute movie clip from the movie Vertical Limit. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, not very scary.
There was the segment that they showed them was they were on the side of a cliff, and then the guy above them, his rope breaks, and he falls on top of their rope, and then they're going to have to cut each other loose, or they're all going to die. It's a pretty tense moment. Now, the neat thing about it was they watched that segment, and they actually paced them during that time. They had a pacemaker on that time, so their heart rate did not change at all. Their blood pressure did go up, and they were breathing more heavy. So then they went back again a second time, and they said, all right, here's what your breathing was last time. Match that again. So they watched this little ball rolling around and got all calm, and then they breathed the same way they breathed while they were watching this scary movie section. And what they found was, again, the blood pressure went up and the heart rhythm. Remember we talked about that action potential duration. Their heart rhythm changed in such a way that would make it slightly more likely they could have an irregular heartbeat while they were watching the movie, but not while they were breathing the same way. And keep in mind, their heart rate was paced, so their heart rate didn't change at all during the movie. So they had an ideal situation where they had absolute control of these subjects' heart, but still, due to a stress-induced release of adrenaline, they could see changes in the way the heartbeats looked on the monitor. They said not likely to cause an irregular heartbeat, even in these people, but they had pretty normal heart function. I've never seen or heard of anyone who had an arrest during a horror movie.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I guess certain people figure out that these types of movies aren't for them, and I guess they don't go.
But I will tell you, you know, I get backed into UK basketball games all the time.
Me too.
Yeah, and I can't seem to – I'll turn the TV set off sometimes, but still.
Yeah, 6 seconds to go in the game, tied, down one, whatever. It can be just very, very emotional. And that's, I guess that's a testament to the Kentucky fan, right? Because we get a lot of grief, but boy, we do actually, we can prove it on a cardiac monitor, right?
Yeah. Well, certainly that's going to do more for me than Vertical Limits, which was a bad movie in the first place. If you don't remember it, you can find that clip. They were climbing Monument Valley. That's all I'll say. You can find that on the internet if you want to see what these subjects went through.
It's another Halloween gone, Tony.
Let's get off the air, Rick.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And why don't you try to guess the source of these classic horror movie quotes?
Wendy. Sally! Darling, light of my life. I'm not going to hurt you. You didn't let me finish my sentence. I said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains.
They're here.
No.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
You should never say who's there. Don't you watch scary movies? It's a death wish.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
I'm every nightmare you ever had. I am your worst dream come true. I'm everything you ever were afraid of.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Please, God.
This is God.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner.
Finally, the most terrifying line of all. Tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.